When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I really like this film. I think Goodfellas and Casino are my two favourite, but this is reasonably high up for me.
The F-bomb features 185 times, apparently.
Well, forget about it.
I just would like to go through the nicknames that Lefty has, also known as sure. Benjamin Ruggiero, a.k.a. Lefty, a.k.a. Lefty Guns, a.k.a. Lefty Two Guns, a.k.a. Half-Cock, a.k.a. Horse-Cock.
I also have this in my notes. It's a bit like they kind of like got the scraps from like all of the other good gangster films and
yeah,
they've like...
Yeah, mush them together. Hey everybody and welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. We're joined by Sam.
Hello.
I'm Ben.
Hi, how you doing?
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Donnie Brasco.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Sam and Ben. If you would like to say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
We are two brothers who talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers and drink beer while we're doing it and have a whale of a time.
Yes, we certainly do. We've spoken about the Red Hot Chili Peppers now for nearly 2 years, haven't we? And
yeah, May last year we started, we watched a live show and thought, we can probably talk about the Chilis. Sam, you introduced me to the band when we were in Spain in about 1997, didn't you?
Yeah, we don't want to age ourselves, but it was a long time ago. So
I was only two.
Oh, really? Exactly.
So 1997, what album was out?
It was One Hot Minute. Maybe it was 90. Yeah, it was just after One Hot Minute came out in 1995, didn't I say?
Yes. I mean, it wasn't necessarily One Hot Minute that got us into the Chilis, but that was the latest album.
Their wilderness years, wasn't it, when they didn't really do anything?
It was a little bit, yeah. And but obviously, they, you know, having listened to One Hot Minute and thoroughly enjoyed it, things only got better.
I remember being at secondary school, and when I was into things like Extreme and Guns N' Roses and things, people were playing Blood Sugar, Blood Sugar Sex Magic at the time, and it kind of passed me by at the time until Sam got.
Well, until luckily, I stepped in. So and we've never looked back. So
it does beg the question: which is your favourite Chili Peppers album?
Well, it varies.
Well, it doesn't. For me, it's a fairly straightforward choice: Blood Sugar, Sex Magic.
Mm. And for me, it changes between Blood Sugar and By the Way, depending on whether I'm feeling funky
moody. It is close. Yeah. But...
Yeah. I mean, I think we're typically talking Blood Sugar, Californication, and By the Way as the pinnacles, aren't they?
I think so.
Three astonishing albums.
All
for Shanty Lead. Yeah. Well, not Lead, but.
No, but obviously it's an exciting time because he's back in the fold. COVID obviously has stepped in and got in the way a little bit, but January was very exciting for us and for everyone that, you know, listens to the Chilis. So yeah, it's a good time to be doing a Chilis podcast, that's for sure.
But Shanti wasn't on Stadium Arcadium, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
I mean,
I found that very boring, the whole album. I think
it was a long one, wasn't it?
When we went through it song by song, and there was a lot of chaff amongst the wheat, and we actually condensed it down to one album. And when you do that, you've got one really great album.
A corker.
What they released was...
Well, it was too much, but I've always defended it. I'd rather have all of that and be able to make my own choices about what I listen to. And but you have always been an advocate of the one album.
That's why, you know, I'm a big GNR fan as well, and they didn't need to release two Use Your Illusion albums. There's one great album there.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
There's only one good double album in my books, and that is Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder. So I know people are White Album fans, and Stadium Arcadium and Bullet with Butterfly Wings are just like, just get pick your 10, 12 best songs and put it together.
They, in my experience, most double albums are 50%.
Yeah, 50% unnecessary. Yeah.
Well, the story of The Clash is a double album, even though it's a compilation album, so I count that as being my favourite double album because everyone's a banger, so but not strictly one that they made as a double album. But it is two CDs together.
It's fine.
Okay, we're here talking about films today, and the choice was from you guys was Donnie Brasco, which is your choice, Sam.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it and give us a synopsis in 1 minute or less?
Yes, well, I chose it. I always look back on Donnie Brasco. It came out in 97, and it was the sort of time when I was really getting into films a bit more seriously, and I watched it then, and I always think back on it as being a great film, so when I was given the chance to choose something, it sort of stood out. It loosely is based on the true story of FBI agent Joseph Pistone, who, using the alias Donnie Brasco, infiltrated the Bonanno crime family in the 1970s. It follows and tells the story of how he did it, focuses on his relationships inside and outside of the mob, and the consequences that had on his life. So, yeah, that's the premise. I'd use the term loosely.
Fairly loosely.
Fairly loosely, yeah.
Apparently it's 85% accurate, according to Pistone. He said that's what he said. Who knows which bits?
Well, that's
and what
that's
about
not
the
bad.
Other bits?
That's good, because it's not often you get a percentage of a true story. Yeah.
That's helpful.
Thank you, Joe.
So I wonder how accurate it has to be for them to be able to put, you know, this is, well, it does say based, doesn't it, on a true story? So it doesn't say it is a true story.
I think one of the things as well is how much of a liberty can you take before you lose an audience who might know about the drive of the actual true story? I think Cody has spoken about that before. Do you need to have the basis of the true story? Mm-hmm. How much you can elaborate? How many characters can you condense and down into one?
Mm.
I think it works there.
I'm definitely more than Kobe, the person who gets offended by made-up bits put in. But I didn't go that far into this one in finding out which bits were true and which bits weren't, but I kind of hope that he did have a pet lion.
Yeah. Well, here's a question then.
Is it a pet when it's enforced on you?
I don't know. It's a white elephant when it's enforced on you. No, the question is, having watched a film and not having looked that much into it, do you think Lefty was killed at the end of the film, or he survived after the film?
If the mafia are as gun happy and kill happy as they're made out to be in real life, then he's a dead man, isn't he? But then the thing about like Goodfellas, which is also based on a true story, is like Henry Hill seems to not be in hiding anywhere, and people know who he is.
They never came after him. He goes to premieres and stuff like that.
So. I kind of wonder how much, whether he's true or not. I don't know. Do you have an answer, or do you have a thought?
Yeah, I think this film heavily implies that Lefty is killed.
Well, I was staggered yesterday when you told me he was still, he wasn't killed.
He died in 1994 or something
like
that.
He died in prison, or died after being in prison or something, didn't he?
He was in prison for 11 years. And I mean, in the film, you have that lovely scene where he's putting all his stuff there for his wife, and he's putting it all in that little finger drawer that he's got that he has to open with his finger. And then it cuts to black and there's a gunshot.
Well, I'm now wondering whether he was just putting all that stuff away and he didn't, when he left the flat, he just walked to prison.
When you found out he died after 11 years in prison, does it say what happened? Did he just go to the police and hand himself in, or did he?
Oh, no, I think he was I think he was indicted.
I think they had enough evidence, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, based on the work of Pistone,
he certainly railed against Joe Pistone afterwards.
Was he indicted before or after he had to go and he was called in, though? That's the question. Because you can be indicted, but you can see your other family before the police catch up with you.
I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure what indulged means, so.
Neither do I. So anyway, so let's talk about, in terms of mafia films, this is a bit, well, I'm going to throw it over to you guys first before I get my opinion, but Sam, you said you remember it being a good film. So what, that insinuates that something's changed.
Well, yes, I think having watched it in leading up to this, I did thoroughly enjoy it. I was a little bit surprised about how easy it was for Donnie Brasco to infiltrate the mafia. He essentially just sat at the bar and glanced over at Al Pacino a couple of times, and then he was in. But that was a little bit, you know, I think they could have done more with that. I think it does a really good job of telling the story of what happened after that and how, you know, he was affected and his life sort of unraveled. His personal life. But I was surprised that he got in quite as easy.
I think that little in's quite nicely done, actually, because it establishes that Lefty is in has gambling debts. He needs something to lay off. And so they have a jeweler there who's exactly what he needs at that time.
Yeah.
He's done a gemology course for the FBI. But that,
no, I mean, imagine if he'd got that wrong, though, then he would, you know.
Well, is it a Fugazi or is it not a Fugazi?
I don't think it was. I like to think it's a real one, but he obviously knew he had a way in just by extending the conversation. Because if it was a real one, he would have just gone and fenced it and got the money back. And there's, here you go, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a super scene when he's.
And then obviously he just beat up the club owner to distract everybody, and that was job done.
Yeah, but what?
Job done. You're in the mafia.
In the first conversation, as the story is told in the film, he managed to get a Porsche out of it within about a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that might be a way in. It might be an official rule. If you get me a Porsche, then you're one step to getting made.
It's like mafia policy and procedures.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he does kind of lay it out, doesn't he, for him? He says, you know, if they say this, it means X. And if they say this, it means Y. And then as the film, progresses, those things are done. And you think, oh, okay, yeah, you know.
It's on the mafia intranet.
I think that was my biggest... This is the first time I've seen it, and that's my biggest thing. I was kind of like face palming about sometimes because it seemed like came from the point of view where no one has ever seen the mafia film before, and Al Pacino has never been in the mafia film. But if Al Pacino's in a film, 99% of the time it's a mafia film, in the 90s, and you're just kind of thinking, who are you telling this to? Because it makes no sense. It makes they know Joe Pistone, Donnie Brasco knows this, the audience knows this.
Yeah,
you don't need to go label all these points. I thought it was a bit pathetic at the start with that kind of stuff, but I don't know.
So it's kind of interesting. You'd not seen it before. So was there a reason why you hadn't seen it, seeing as it's been around for 1997?
Just it'd never been never been available to me to watch. I hadn't really sought it out. The fact that it came out in 97 surprised me because it was well within the realms of me going to the video store and renting it out and watching it. So it's probably just fell out of my radar or something that wasn't that interesting.
Yeah. Because this is the second time. So I have seen it before. I couldn't really remember much about it other than that I'd seen it. And I think what surprised me the most about it is quite how pedestrian it is. We've mentioned Goodfellas. It's no Goodfellas. And
no, that's fair.
I think this was probably like peak Depp. Whereas like anything now that Johnny Depp releases just makes me feel a little bit sick. So when I was watching it, I was a bit like, ooh. Yeah, I know.
When you say peak Depp, does that mean as in he's really good in this or this is at the height of his powers?
I think it was his height. I think after this, this was obviously before the pirate stuff, and then anything after that is just dog shite, really. And
well, Pirates 1 was very good, I thought.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pirates 1, so.
Okay, the ones after that. And I wonder if it's slightly something that's down to the fact that, you know, it's Mike Newell directing it, who is not really that kind of flashy.
Yeah.
So what else is Mike Newell? What else other films has he directed to?
Four Weddings and a Funeral, context? Pushing Tin, the two that I've seen. And then he's also directed a Harry Potter one, The Goblet of Fire, which I haven't seen. Okay. So I don't know if that's a particularly good one in the Potter canon.
I've never seen a Harry Potter film nor read a Harry Potter book. What about you, Sam?
No, the same. But I do agree that it seems like a fairly left field film for someone like Mike Newell to do, based on the other films that he's done. And I also agree that it is fairly pedestrian, and you do have to stick with it. I think that it does. I did find it enjoyable and fairly rewarding by the end, but Yeah, there were times when I was having to stop myself picking my phone up and, looking at Twitter, that kind of thing.
I was going to lean into the engagement score there.
Yeah, I think he's done other character studies, though, Mike Newell. Pushing Tin is essentially, that was one of the first DVD I ever bought. I bought it from an off license. Unwin's gone now.
Is that a John Cusack film?
Yeah, and Billy Bob. Yeah.
Before he went a bit mad.
Yeah. Is this a thing?
Mike Newell turns people mad. Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman.
In Four Weddings, what's the name? Hugh Grant.
It would have been a much better film.
Mike Newell turns people mad. Maybe he's the one that's got to J.K. Rowling. Anyway,
you pushed him in. You pushed Hugh Grant into Divine's arms.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned about how easy it was for him to kind of get into the mafia. So it got me thinking about another good Scorsese film, The Departed, where there's obviously no spoilers, but kind of like the double undercover thing. And they go to quite a lot of lengths in that film to kind of check that the new guy isn't like an undercover cop. Whereas in this film, no one's like, hey, new guy, who are you? Like,
it's okay.
these strange things keep happening. Like, it could be you. And there's like none of that.
No,
Al Pacino, Lefty, does check with
He checks with the other two guys. He says, who's he?
Jilly.
Oh, he checks with the barber, but he also checks with the other two. You know, who's he? Oh, he's the jeweler. He's fine. But they sit with him every day, and they knew who he was. So I don't understand how Lefty didn't know who he was as well. But
yeah, that's true. They're always in the same place.
Yeah, they go everywhere together.
And should you be suspicious of anyone who doesn't want to take their shoes off?
I know.
Yeah, but I think that's actually a really well done part of the film, because just before that you've got the musical montage, and it establishes then that he keeps his tape recorder in his boot. And then pretty much the next scene after
you've got that. Shock horror. He's required to take his
tape recorder.
Yeah, I know. But I haven't seen it for a few years, and I was concerned at that point.
If I was a mafia man, if that's the correct terminology, if I was Sonny Black,
it is.
I would check people who wore cowboy boots just for that purpose.
But I think it's a good scene, and he got out of it fairly.
It's a hard scene to watch. I think it's a
Well, you say that it is, but this is an 18.
Is it?
And there's nothing in it. Yeah, exactly. I was as well, because there's really nothing in there to make it an 18. I don't think.
Yeah, but I think you're going chopping through a guy's leg.
He's got his boot on. He does keep his boot on.
But it's still grim.
He could have taken that boot off. We've established he likes cowboy boots.
Yeah.
He could have kept that boot.
Sonny Red's boots. Well, do you think, there are some, it's quite pedestrian, but there are some scenes of violence, I guess, which perhaps amps it up to an 18, at least in 1997 terms. Reconfigured to, in fact, Netflix has only recently started using those certifications, haven't they? Because it used to be like Mature Plus or something. It seems that now they're using the same as the BBFC.
Mm.
As their categorization.
It's a 15 if it's released nowadays. And that's top end. Right. There's a lot of swearing, but...
The F-bomb features 185 times, apparently.
Well, forget about it.
That features 28 times.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Was this the film that... there was a period, and Helen asked me about, like, what was my understanding of Donnie Brasco at the time, but there was a period when lots of people were saying forget about it, but I just thought that was from other mafia movies, but in this time literally every other sentence to exhaustion.
and of course they do dedicate a scene to it as well, so
yeah, well, with Paul Giamatti.
Great. I love that scene.
That clears it up, I think,
I know. Hey, what's forget about it? It's like, come on, mate. Come on.
Paul,
you're clever than this.
It's a thing.
But I think that was probably the earliest I've seen Paul Giamatti. And also good to see Tim Blake Nelson. And we'll talk about Tim Blake Nelson in a different episode, maybe. But I quite like seeing character actors where they didn't have any kind of notoriety or fame around them. It's always good going back and seeing them for the first time, go, oh, that's where they started. That's good. That's cool.
Tim Blake Nelson's very smiley in this film. I quite like that.
A bit too much.
Yeah. He should be knackered. He's for the job he's done. He shouldn't be that cheerful. But they do chuck him with Budweiser, don't they? And it phones up and Giamatti opens it. It's one of the bugbears. Do not throw me a can of beer.
Well, that's true. But actually, I was listening to the Truman Show episode leading up to this, and of course, he popped up in that as well. So
yeah,
he was kind of in a lot of really good films around this time and establishing himself. So
yeah, so this is Truman. So I think the first thing I saw him in was Private Parts, but I can't remember what year that came out.
Pig Vomit. Yeah. That was. I think it was the same year as this.
Yeah,
possibly.
It's Private Parts. The Shock Jock.
The Howard Stern movie.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, he's Pig Vomit in it, which is very unfortunate because obviously every film that I saw after it with him in, I just used to yell, "It's Pig Vomit," which I'm sure he probably got that when people would like see him in the street and, you know, casting directors and everything.
Yeah. Hey, Pig Vomit.
So what do you reckon about the main cast then? Because I think this is another kind of one of my bugbears. Like Bruno Kirby, was it supposed to be Joe Pesci and? Was that who they tried to
pet? They did try to get Pesci.
Okay, well, there you go. And so I was just like, Bruno Kirby's a bit cuddly. Even though, I mean, Pesci's not a big guy, but he still has that kind of presence. Where you're kind of scared of him.
Yeah.
And Bruno Kirby just doesn't have that. Michael Madsen's like, is it really?
It's kind of like, it's
kind Mr. of like, Blonde casting.
Yeah.
It's a bit like... They kind of like got the scraps from like all of the other good gangster films and good like undercover cop films, and they've like
mushed them together
and managed to throw together a reasonable film. Yeah, I think.
Well, apparently Johnny Depp was cast because like he kind of looks Italian.
Is Michael Madsen Italian as well?
I don't think so.
Sure. I think he's just got dark hair.
That's what it takes.
So it's pretty much on the back of Al Pacino as the gangster, and I didn't buy Johnny Depp in it. Like I said, Madsen, no. Bruno Kirby, no.
All this is going badly. Yeah.
What about Anne Hesch? Or how do you pronounce the name? Is it?
That's how I pronounce it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing if I said it first. So. But yeah. I think she's. You know, I think she did a pretty good job actually.
I think she's fine. I think it's something that you could have built up more. That's an interesting. That's an interesting story about how life undercover in the FBI affects your home life and your personal life.
Oh yeah, but if they'd made a film about that, you'd have been like, "This is a ridiculous film. Why isn't it more about what was going on when he was?"
I want to see how she arranges the cupboards.
Yeah, what was that cereal thing?
Yeah,
did we get to the bottom of that?
Well.
Explored enough. That was the sequel, Tony.
Serial Brasco. Yeah.
But I think, I mean, the Sopranos came out around this kind of time as well, didn't it? And that came from a different angle of the family life, as in your wife and kids, and also the family life as in the mafia family. So I think there is something in that in terms of the other side of the undercover, because you obviously the quote unquote sexy side where they've got to infiltrate and they've got to learn, they might have to kill someone, but that's part of the course to get the indictment, which we still don't know what that means.
We'll look it up later.
But I think there is something to that, and I think Anne Hesch's character did okay.
Yes.
But she was always going to be the annoying partner who doesn't know is not allowed to know what's on the other side. And I thought that bit where she hid the $300,000 was a bit weird.
That whole section is strange because he goes in, she wants a divorce, they're struggling with the counselling. He goes in and hits her. I thought at that point, well, the first time I saw it, I imagine, that's probably the end of that marriage for sure. But then, you know, it's all fine moving forward. Maybe, I don't know if that's true or not. I didn't look into it that deeply, but it's a funny arc.
What do you reckon, Helen, to Anne Hesch's Mrs. Pistone?
Yeah, but she did kind of feel a little bit like a side character. That it's definitely more kind of more on his relationship with Lefty, and it's kind of odd because it doesn't really kind of explore that. You know, it kind of comes across that, you know, Donnie's having quite a good time. He's quite enjoying this and he's kind of really getting into it. And there's not really much internal conflict or kind of like, you know, I just had to saw someone up. I feel really bad about it. It's just a bit like another day on the job kind of thing.
There's the part where it's his daughter's, there's a ceremony of some sort for his daughter. I'm not sure what it is.
Confirmation.
Yeah. And the other people that say, oh, Donnie's got held up in snow. Right, but you can't. This has been years, right? And they never see him. Where the hell do they think he is?
Well,
he's caught up in snow again. Oh, he's got another flat tire.
Yes. Well, you know, wherever he is, the weather is terrible.
I would like to actually see the documentary about this, because it is. These kind of things do interest me, and I would like to know more about the undercover side of things and what you have to go through. But I would have thought he could say, "Look, I know you. I work for the FBI, so I've got to do a few things I can't tell you about, and this will mean I'm away for like 6 months. I'm sorry, I'm not around. If I can't make it for Christmas, it's not because I don't want to be there. It's because suddenly I literally cannot. So I don't know. So she just naturally becomes like a shrill character." And that's unfortunate, I think. I think there's ways to show conflict in a relationship rather than saying, you were late for Christmas, and that kind of nonsense.
Yes, yeah.
I think she does say in the film that it was meant to be X number of months, like a couple of months, and it was meant to be 6 months, it's turned into 2 years or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like I said, it's a funny arc. She doesn't like him. She wants to divorce him. He hits her. And then they get a $500 check and everything's peachy keen again.
Well, that's interesting, because you said, Sam, that it was quite easy to infiltrate the FBI, to infiltrate the mafia, but if he's been sat at that bench for like 18 months, that might be part of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen... The thing is, it's over 2 hours already, this film, so there really is no time to explain how it all happened, because otherwise it's going to be even more pedestrian. So I guess they just had to get him in there and then, you know, get going. So, yeah. But, yeah, it must have taken a long time. I guess that's what they want us to pick up on as the film wears on, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Guys, do you have anything else to say before we head to the scores?
I just would like to go through the nicknames that Lefty has, also known as when the guy is doing the typewriter report. Benjamin Ruggiero, a.k.a. Lefty. Now, this is all quite pedestrian until we get to the last one. A.k.a. Lefty Guns, a.k.a. Lefty Two Guns, a.k.a. Halfcock, a.k.a. Horsecock.
I also have this in my notes.
Where did that come from?
What?
They're all about guns. Even Halfcock made sense for a gun.
Yeah.
Why is he called? I can imagine why he might be called a horse cock, but that is.
Well, we don't. Yeah, we just. I must have been looking at my phone at that point.
It's a funny one for kind of to be around like the mafia boys, or like
exactly.
The FBI to be on with that one. But yeah, I wrote that one down. I was like,
caught you right.
Yeah, I'm not going to call him Lefty anymore. I'm just going to call him Horsecock.
Yeah,
I like one thing I did like about this in terms of Pacino, because it was Pacino, not to 11 necessarily, but it was, you know, high up there on the scale. But what I quite liked about it is that typically in mafia films, the gangsters are portrayed of having like a big house and lots of money, and they're always living a life of luxury. But this one, it seemed Lefty was very much down on his luck, or, you know, this thing's playing into his mind. He's got problems with his son. He hasn't got much money, or whatever money he has, it kind of throws it away. And the flat he lives in, the apartment he lives in, isn't that nice in any way, shape, or form. So I thought that's quite an interesting take for someone who's quite high. It was a made man, presumably.
I think there's a lovely bit where he talks to Donnie when they're first going down to the club. And he's talking about keeping your money in a roll, and you put the big notes on the outside, essentially. And then at the end, when he's putting everything in that little thing, in that little drawer, he puts his roll in, and it's a $5 bill on the outside. And it just shows how far he's, you know, how far he has fallen and how much he owes. Yeah. The Vig is 300 grand a week that he owes Sonny Red.
Three grand.
Yeah. Sorry, the boat was 300 grand.
But throughout the entire film, Lefty is constantly trying to get him as a gangster. He's trying to get in there, and he constantly fails, and eventually Johnny Depp's character is introduced, and he's left in the background staring in, and you know you just get the feeling that combined with the flat and everything like that, he's
a bit of a loser,
not a very good mob boss.
No, not at all. So.
It's not really an ad. This one isn't really an advert for being a gangster, whereas obviously Goodfellas is sort of a little bit in that. It's quite exciting at the start, and he at least gets like a good table at a restaurant. Whereas this is a bit like, a bit hard work,
Smashing up parking meters.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just very sad, isn't it?
It just seems to be a constant struggle. So yeah, I'm not. I was before I watched this. I was thinking about a career change, but now, no, thinking about sticking to my day job.
Okay, with that, let's head to the scores.
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
So welcome to the spreadsheet of dreams. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Sam, with your recommendability.
I thought it was going to be higher, but I think I'm going to go for a 3.8 just because, it didn't inspire me as much as it used to.
Ben?
I think for recommendability, I really like this film, so I'm going to go for a 4. I think it's a film I think most people might enjoy. It's not for my mum or my grandma, but I'm going to go for a 4, straight 4.
Helen?
I'm going to go a little bit lower, a 3.5. I think it's definitely got its audience, but it's no Goodfellas for me.
Yeah, I'm going to join Sam with exactly 3.8 as well. I think it's good. I've seen it, but in the pantheon of gangster films and also TV series, including things like the first few series like Boardwalk Empire, for example, it's not up to scratch. But it's still, it's fun. Al Pacino is in good form. I kind of just, blur your eyes. Everything else that happens goes around it, I think. Because it's an interesting take on the gangster film. And also interesting take on the kind of the undercover side of things as well. Repeat viewing score, Sam?
Again, I think I previously may have placed it higher. I'm going to go... I don't think I won't be watching it again anytime soon. So I think it's going to have to be quite low. Maybe a 3.1. And I think that might be quite generous.
So, yeah, how many times have you seen it?
Over the years, quite a lot. I mean, I became a serious DVD collector in the early 2000s, and this was one that I snapped up pretty quickly. And I used to think it was an absolute cracker. But, I guess so.
Just grown up.
Yeah, grown up a little bit. And now, now it's just a 3.1. So that's it.
Ben?
I think I've probably seen this 5 or 6 times. I will watch it again. I do enjoy it. Yeah, I think I'm going to go for 3.85.
So, Ben, you've seen the most up on this at the moment. What's your favourite gangster films, or which gangster films do you put ahead of this one?
Well, Goodfellas and Casino are my two favourite gangster films. They're both masterpieces, and I actually prefer Casino over Goodfellas. And this isn't what I like about this. Is as Helen said, it shows the less glamorous side. They're not in Vegas. They're not doing swanky walkthroughs to get to the front of the stage. Horsecock, as I now call him, is a bit of a loser. He's down on his luck. It's not much fun. Even when he arranges the amazing, he arranges that lovely boat. Well, he arranges it. I mean, Donnie does. Even when that happens, the first thing that happens is he gets pulled out from underneath.
Yeah, he gets bypassed.
I think Goodfellas and Casino are my two favourite, but this is reasonably high up for me.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm definitely a lot lower than you guys. I mean, I've definitely seen it once, but I've never ever wanted to go back to it, which is kind of weird because I've seen Goodfellas loads and Casino as well. Casino is that funny one where it's amazing and yet it's sort of disappeared. Like it's never been on Netflix, and it's never really had kind of the sort of revival that Goodfellas had. And out of the two, quite a lot of people have never seen it, or if they have, they only have like a vague memory of it. So if someone said, do you want to watch Donnie Brasco or do you want to watch Casino? it would be Casino.
It would be for me as well.
I think I've got all I need from this, so I'm going to give it a one. Sorry.
Okay. Yes.
I'm going to go for two. I'll watch it again, and I think it's one. It's kind of one that I can watch without really having to pay much attention to it. And that's why it'll be on. It'll be something that I need to do stuff in the lounge, and it's good to have that kind of thing on and just laugh whenever they say, forget about it. Ah, forget about it. And you can't watch the film and not stand in front of me and go, hey, forget about it.
Could make a drinking game.
You could do. Absolutely. I'm sure there are. Google forget about it drinking game. Sorry, Donnie Brasco drinking game. I've never seen Casino. I can't remember seeing it. I must have seen bits of it, but it just hasn't landed in my head properly. And I think it's just because, again, with Donnie Brasco, it was like, it came out and then I didn't get a DVD or didn't watch it straight away. And then if you don't watch it within a year, it kind of falls away. And as Helen said, now with the revival of other things, it just maybe hasn't appeared on Amazon Prime or Netflix or wherever.
It's disappeared. It's kind of a weird one, isn't it? I wonder if there's some kind of like...
It's
conspiracy.
It's worth
licensing or something, because it's not even like available for rent on Prime or anything like that. So it's a really strange one. And I can't remember ever getting a DVD of it. And obviously I had a DVD for Goodfellas, and I don't know where it's gone, but Marty, if you're listening.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely got it on DVD.
Yeah. I've got the double disc.
Yeah.
And
have you?
Yeah.
Because, of course, Goodfellas was famously one you
cardboard
had to turn
case,
over.
Wasn't it? Yeah, cardboard case.
Yes.
So I lent it to my sister, and she'd never seen it. She came back and said, I said, what did you think of it? And she said, well, it didn't really make any sense. And she'd only watched the second half.
She watched the second half first.
Yeah, just the second half. So, But, there wasn't many turners, back in the day, but that was one of them.
It started abruptly.
Yeah, I think that's the first time I watched it was a Turner, and I remember it annoyed me enough that I didn't watch it again, because like, why would I do that? It's like a TDK. It's like even cassette tapes auto turn. I'm just going to try and find out where we can find Casino, so, and I'll make a bid to try and watch it in the interim. But yeah, 2.5, small screen score.
Well, I think actually this is where it is looked upon favourably for me. I can't imagine that it was particularly much better if you watched it in the cinema. So I'm going to give it a four.
You said that very highly.
Yeah. I'm going to give it four. I think if it is going to be good, it's going to be good on the small screen. So I'm going to give it a four.
Ben?
I'm a little bit higher, 4.5. I can't imagine that it would give you much more in the cinema. So,
Helen?
I'm going to give it a five. I don't think there's anything that would...
is good about it.
No, and then it's... It's kind of weird because it's got like that weird kind of typewriter, factual documentary,
isn't it?
And then it's got completely none of that, as in we're kind of seeing it in this cinematic world. So it's very kind of like strange, but also slightly made for TV kind of feel. So
it does have that feel.
So what was your score? Five. Yeah, I'm going to go for five as well. No reason to see us in a cinema in any way, shape or form. engagement score, Sam.
Yes, this is, I did pick my phone up a couple of times. That can't be good. I'm just going to say 3.3.
Sounds like you want to make it higher, but it's just not.
I just couldn't bring myself to make it any higher than that, I'm afraid.
Ben?
Actually, the thing that takes me out of the film more than anything else, and I think I enjoyed Epp's performance. I really enjoyed Pacino's performance. I didn't look at my phone once during it. The thing that takes me out is the score, which is mixed so highly and signposts exactly how you're meant to feel for every scene that every time the score came in, it made me realise I was watching I am watching a film, and it took me out of the film. And from the first time I saw it, and I've moaned to Vanessa about it my wife when we watch it, the score takes me out of it. So it's a four. I wish the score was mixed lower, and I wish the score was better.
I'd rather watch the score, actually.
Oh, the score's a good film.
Yeah.
That is a good film.
Helen?
My engagement was very low on this one. I don't know what it was, but I just kind of knew, because I'd seen it before, I was like... I kind of know the ending, and I know he's undercover, and it's quite a long film, and there aren't that many kind of like really big milestones in it, apart from maybe kind of the boat and the whole Florida thing and like the soaring up the bodies. And that there's not, I guess that sometimes trailing some mafia people is not as exciting as some of the other ones. I'll give it a 3, even though I was on my phone for most of it. But reading about it.
And this is one, I'm going to give it 2.5, and this is one where, well, with most based on true story films, where I'm like, I'm aching to like find out the details afterwards. And whilst watching, I was like, is this true? Is this not? And I never managed to pick up my phone. But then as soon as the film finished, I completely forgot to check. So yeah. I will be.
Who cares? Yeah.
That's that kind of is damning of it. But one thing I realized was there's a couple of times where I had to rewind it because I missed something. It's either I didn't think it was shot that well or that subtle. And one of them being when Bruno Kirby's character got killed, because it happened so slightly. But you know, within like five seconds, he was walking away and he got shot. And then you don't see him again. But then the conversation with Al Pacino and Johnny Depp was like, oh, you've killed this guy. And I missed it. So I don't think it set things up. I don't think it set scenes up that well.
No. And of course, we were chatting before we came on about just leading up to that, when for no apparent reason, Johnny Depp's character is led out of the car at gunpoint by that man.
Yeah.
But, and then, so he leaves...
Yeah, that man. No one knows his name.
So that guy gets back in the car, puts a gun in the back of his neck, and of course they've set this up by telling him to stay in the car in the first place. Mm. And then he leads him out at gunpoint, leads him down to the scene of the crime, and then says, oh yeah, by the way, we just need you to help us cut through this guy's boot and cut his leg off.
Yeah, they're setting it up so on the first view, there's some suspense to it.
Yeah.
But the second time you watch it, that is ridiculous. Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
And I think we must also mention the comedy sound effect when Sonny Black punches Nicky in the face.
Oh, yeah.
In the bar. Did you notice that sound effect? Oh, there's that classic kind of stock sound where you hit someone and he just kind of punches him.
This is a small punch and it goes, "Koosh." So, yeah, that's, those things and some of the direction as well, I thought was particularly dated. Just like some of the like outside of the car shots where they were.
Oh, had a camera on the left hand side.
Yeah. Just felt particularly dated and
that never served any purpose because it was always just in a straight line as well.
Yeah, they were just driving straight across the bridge.
So, trying to emulate Scorsese.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it
long
was.
Long shots.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Failed. Okay, so that gives us an overall score of 3.55313.
That's actually pretty good, I think.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
So going to Twitter, guys, as we do every time we record, we put a shout out on Twitter. So do follow us. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And say things very similar to this. We're reviewing Donnie Brasco with Ben Townsend 77 and Sam from University RACP. Sam, I don't know if you're on Twitter. Have you seen it? Tells your thoughts and a score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out. We have 2 responses. Sam, do you want to lead us with the first one?
Not up with the great mob films, but an okay movie that should really have leaned more into the forgotten family at home plot more. Fantastic.
That's what we said, isn't it?
That's exactly what it said. I could have read it better, but it did say that.
I mean, that was terrible. That was genuine.
That's what we were saying. What we were saying.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just to confirm, you can read, can't
you? I can read, yes. Yeah, I can.
He gives it 3 out of 5, which is roughly what we said, and then says, forget about it.
Ben.
Okay, we got one from... Big Dave, yes. Brasco is a cracker of a movie. Classic Pacino performance, 4.5 out of 5. Looking forward to listening to your thoughts on this film.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys. Well, thanks for giving us your thoughts, guys. Tell people where I can find University Speaking and say goodbye to the listeners.
Okay, so we are Ben and Sam Townsend from the University Speaking podcast. Our show is hosted at bentownsendmusic.net. Email at bentownsendmusic@hotmail.com. Sam, you are?
I'm at Stack Townsend on Twitter.
and on you're something, aren't you? University RHCP Odd Sam, is that Reddit?
That's me, yeah.
Lovely. And I am at University RHCP on Twitter. So, yeah, send them over. If you like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we are your guys.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.